Murphy, thank you very, very much.
Yes, I want to join in that, too. It's so great for you to take time out and to come up here and give us your whole afternoon. I thought you were going, when we started, I said, maybe we can keep him for 20 minutes, the whole first segment. And we asked him, how long can you stay? He said, he'll stay as long as we're here. So let us make a big statement at the end here. We still have time. We have time to make this day special. 212-209-2950.
Thanks to everybody that participated in getting this done. We so, so appreciate it.
And you're tuned to WBAI New York, where a world of pleasure awaits you this evening. Jim Freund will be here live either at 1 or 1:30. I wish I knew which, because it would make it easier to prepare for the coming evening ahead. So stick around. We'll have an announcement or two, and then another wonderful fundraising program. Keep those calls coming in, 212-209-2950.
Hi, Paul Fisher from WBAI then and WBAI now. Tired of pesky programs interrupting our fascinating fundraising drives? No problem, don't touch that dial. We can sell you conspiracies and miracle cures till the sun goes supernova. Or you can help WBAI again become a station known for programs, not just products. How? Thought you'd never ask. Become a BAI buddy. That's a minimum $10 a month donation for each of the next 12 months. Help end the heartbreak of psoriasis cures and other lotions, potions, and nostrums sold on the radio by sending us money to make radio. Go to WBAI.org, our website, and become a BAI buddy. Well, I don't know if I'm walking on solid
ground. Bad city, God! Politicize is coming at you Thursday, 3 to 5 p.m. Eastern, with me, Substantia Jones. Activists, newsmakers, and science types in conversation about sizeism, the $66 billion a year U.S. weight loss industry, faction, entertainment, sex, art, most things relating to fat bodies, and why my voice sounds familiar. You can join the conversation by calling in during the live broadcasts. Politicize, emphasis on the size. Thursdays in February, 3 to 5 p.m. on WBAI, 99.5 FM in New York City, and streaming live at WBAI.org.
And it is midnight, 12 a.m. You're tuned to listener-sponsored, non-commercial, WBAI New York, 99.5 FM, streaming live at WBAI.org. And we're going to hear next why it looks like Amy Goodman coming up. As soon as I find it. Why, there it is. Please stay tuned.
This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the War and Peace Report, and I'm asking you to go to the phone to become a member of WBAI. If you appreciate today's broadcast, we ask you to make the call that makes WBAI happen. The number to call is 212-209-2950 as we turn to a speech by Dr. Joy DeGruy, the internationally renowned researcher, educator, author, presenter, author of The Post-Traumatic Slave Syndrome, America's Legacy of Enduring Injury and Healing. If you want to get the book for a contribution of $100. If you want to get the DVD, Post-Traumatic Slave Syndrome, Let the Healing Begin, pledge $120. The book and DVD together are yours for $200. If you call 212-209-2950, Post-Traumatic Slave Syndrome, America's Legacy of Enduring Injury and Healing. This is Joy DeGruy.
Post-traumatic slave syndrome is exactly what it sounds like. It's looking at the concept of multi-generational trauma. Now, the average person, including black people, that will actually hear post-traumatic slave syndrome and not want to come. They don't even want to, they go, oh, because they start getting worried about what white people are going to think when you say slavery. If slavery's in the title, black people start getting nervous about what white people are going to say. And it's a very interesting sociological reality, because we start realizing that what's going to happen is you're going to get pushback, right? You're going to hear people going, oh, are they going to, she's not going to talk slavery. Are you really? You're going to talk about slavery? Aren't y'all free now? I mean, really? I mean, come on now. You know how long ago slavery, I mean, who are you trying to blame? You know, what excuses are you people trying to come up with? I wasn't there, okay? I didn't own slaves. I mean, people get all twisted when you say that. And the reason for that is kind of part of how my research got started, because I thought that was a curious thing. Because multi-generational trauma is not new. And looking at it is not new. Intergenerational trauma, intergenerational transmission of trauma, none of that's new. We've looked at all kinds of different groups. Native Americans and the impact of colonialism, unresolved grief. We've looked at Aboriginal folks in Australia. We've looked at victims of war. Then why is there the pushback when I say slavery? Why is there not the same pushback when I say Holocaust? Because you see, we're really talking about the same thing. The only difference is we're talking about black people. And what's interesting about that is, again, I teach a 10-week course, which is, it's if you go online and go on Portland, say, you'll see my syllabus, you'll see the explanation of the course, you'll see the title of my book, and I tell people, this is about black people. I want to be clear about that. I'm not apologizing that I'm only going to talk about black people. I'm not going to talk about anybody else. I have to tell my students, I'm going to show up black next week. The week after that, it's going to be about black people. The week after that, it's going to be about black people. Every single week. And inevitably, there's a student that goes, it's in the little evaluation. The professor spent an inordinate amount of time talking about black people. And it feels unnatural that she should talk that much about. Do you know how much? I have three advanced degrees, right? Two master's degrees and a PhD, a bachelor's degree, and then the whole load of nut crazy stuff I went through elementary, middle, and high school with, and all of it was about white people. But somehow it just feels so unnatural to be talking that much about black people. A whole 10 weeks, imagine that. Right? So it feels, because of the way we've been socialized in this country, that that's just too much time to be talking about black people, right? And the bottom line is we've never had the conversation, you see. So that's why black people start getting uncomfortable and start looking in the room at the white people and going, is she making the white people uncomfortable? And heaven forbid the white people. And if Cindy cries, what are we going to do? What are we going to do, right? And it's that, my whole life it's been that way. One person, you've given a whole lecture, years of research, and one person raises their hands from, you know, somewhere out in Arkansas and says, are you sure? Because I'm feeling like I've never experienced this, and I'm feeling uncomfortable. I feel like, you know, people are calling me a racist. And then she cries, and then the whole thing gets disrupted because of that. Right? And the bottom line is, I have walked through the world in this skin. Aside from having all of the scholarship, I've walked 55 years in this skin. And that gives me a certain legitimacy about myself. Right? And it's just a real interesting common sense thing. But, you know, I've had people say, oh, I know all about you people. I have a minor in a degree in black studies. I know all about you. Right? Amazing. Anyway, so that said, when we begin to look at the conversation about race, there are certain things I do to clear out my room. I just want to thin the course. I want to thin it out so that the people that end up in my class want to be there. I said, this is not the class to take to fit into your program. You go, oh, God, this is a good time. I'll put that one in. Not the class. My course is a life-changing course. It truly is a life. And I don't mean that because I have some, you know, it's really the truth. You don't lead the same if you've been 10 weeks in my course. And so I tell them, don't squeeze it in. It's not that kind of course. And then I explain to them that it's not one of those things where, you know, we all walk in this room at the same level. Those of you, there are those of you that walked in this program at what we call the 600 level, having never entered a classroom, having never had any kinds of, you know, scholarship around it, but having lived in skin that suggested you were a bit different. People of color walked into this room at the 600 level because they've lived in that skin. That's just a fact, okay? And they get to have that. Then there are people who walk in this room, good, well-meaning, good hearts, interested, curious, 101. They're at the level 101. There's nothing wrong with 101. I don't teach it, however. I don't teach 101. I think it's valid. It's a prerequisite. But they, you know, people thought, and again, sometimes people go, well, it's an era black woman teaching. It doesn't matter, because if anybody black teaching, I can handle it. There are folks that believe that, that it could not be above my head, right? So there's a person that comes in 101 that has a different concept of race, race relationships, and racism. And they're the ones that are going, are you sure? Isn't it all better now? After all, you have a black president. You have them. They're in here too. And they're seated next to someone that wants to talk about reparations. So therein lies the problem of the speaker, because I got to keep everybody in the room safe and comfortable, right? So it's a task. And again, it's not my intent to make anyone feel uncomfortable. The nature of this material is intense. It's going to be even more intense because I have to condense it. But I want to be very clear about the problems that are associated with this and why this room is so filled today. Because we're a hot mess in this country around race. We're a hot mess. So we have to have the conversation. So when we begin the conversation, we have to start figuring out where we are. So I thin my room by asking a couple of fundamental questions. So the first question I ask is, are we all on the same page when we say racism, right? So we say racism, right? And this is a system of advantage based on race, rolls off the lips. It seems pretty straightforward. I think I have that up here somewhere. Let's see, where is it? No, I'm going to go back. So we go back to, these are my warm and fuzzy pick things that I do. I do a warm and fuzzy just so people know that I'm not, you know, because folks get very upset and concerned. I really have a fundamental belief that part of our problem as human beings is we don't really see ourselves as fully human. And our lack of humanity is why we have the problems we have. I really do believe, like Einstein said in this statement, that we are all in just intrinsically connected. We are connected to each other. Everything is connected. And that's what Einstein believed and was able to prove to some degree. On a cellular level, we are connected, and that our problem is we suffer a delusion of separateness, and that's what makes for the crazy stuff, okay? So I believe fundamentally that we are connected, and our refusal to accept that is the reason why we're seeing the disintegration in our cultures and our societies, is we have to realize that we're a globe. This is a global reality. We can't even guess who's coming to dinner now. Because our children, my 2-year-old granddaughter can navigate, you know, the internet and talk to somebody in China and literally develop a relationship with someone on the other side of the world. So her world is not shrunk into a living room. Her world is global. And if we keep treating our children like this is just, you know, you're this singular, separate thing, it's just not going to work. We've got to start figuring out we are one world, and that's the truth. But we can't act like a world because we've been socialized to believe the myths and the lies. So the very first, principle upon which I live and breathe is the principle of truth. Truthfulness, I believe, is the foundation of all human virtue. If you are not truthful, you are not going to be a healthy person. It is the secrets that make us sick. My years of clinical work has proven it. My 55 years in this skin has taught me that. So we have to start telling the truth, and sometimes the truth is not easily heard. One of the truths that we have to deal with is the fact that the majority of the world is indeed a world of color. Of the 7+ billion people on the planet, the majority of those people are people of color. That's a fact, right? And so now that we are a globe, it's inevitable that we're going to see audiences that look more like this one than the solitary, single, separated systems that we have lived under in the past. And for some folks, that creates problems because people start worrying about the blending. And the worry about the blending has existed for many, many years. And the truth is, if you just look at it, just you looked at everybody in this room and you blended them all up, in the future, people will be the color of ripened wheat. That's the future. Whatever we want to do or believe, that's the future. And so we have to begin to deal with numbers. Some people like numbers. So these are numbers, and they're real numbers. And as long as people have been able to keep themselves separated, they can't anymore. So when we think about who we are, wonderful statement from Gandhi. I really believe this because it plays out in everyone's life. Your beliefs become your thoughts. Thoughts become your words. Words become your actions. Actions become your habits. Habits become your values. Your values become your destiny. What do we value? I believe that we don't value our humanity, which is the reason why it's so difficult for us to deal with this issue of race and racism and justice and equity, any of those, because we are not willing to see the intrinsic value in all people. Everyone has been born with the right to be treated with respect and dignity. That's not something that must be earned. We were all born deserving that. And if we really, truly believe that, then we'll see it exercised in our lives. So the first chapter in my book is called I Don't Even Notice Race. And I did that because people have actually said that to me. In a way, trying to compliment me. Joy, you know what? I don't even notice that you're black. I find that odd because I do. Every single day I look in the mirror, black woman, surely, there she is, every day, black woman. I'm not confused about it. Why should anyone else be confused? And then as a social scientist and a clinician, the first thing that resonates with me is that's not a true statement. It's just not true. That's number one, it's not true. I don't notice race. Nothing true about that statement. And if you ever want to really test if people are telling the truth. This is so amazing. Although that's on face value is not true. And the reason why that's not true on face value is because the people who say that to you are usually white people. And they only say it to the people they notice. I'm just saying. They don't say it to other white people. You know what I'm saying? And so then the second question is, why would you feel like you needed to say that? I don't even notice that you're black. That's not a compliment to me. I'm not interested in you erasing me in order to be able to feel comfortable with yourself. I need you to be able to see me, right? But erasing you is somehow a compliment that, you know, your blackness really, I'm not noticing it, right? Now, the two people in the group, at least in my experience, that tend to tell the truth more frequently than others, two groups. Little children. The little ones, right? The little ones that you just hope that don't get in the room before you. That crew. About 3 1/2. My perfect favorite age is 3 1/2 because they have opinions. And they're the few people in the world that you can rely on that will tell you when you have a booger. Your best friend will let you go all day with that booger. But a 3-year-old will go, you got a booger in your nose. They'll tell you. And see, old people tell you too. Because see, old people, you stop caring. Anybody 50 and above? If you're 50 and above, raise your hand. Isn't it nice to not care what people think? Wasn't it a wonderful thing? You know, I can kind of remember when I used to care what people think. You know, I go, I think I've upset her. I don't know that she likes me. Now people can say, well, Joy, you know, I don't think she likes you. I go, I hope that works out for her. It's a developmental stage. It's a wonderful, live with it, love it. So what prompts a person to say that? And my sense of things and my research says to me the reason why people say things like, I don't even notice race, or even worse, this one, I don't really care what color people are. I mean, you could be purple, green, or blue. We're not, they can't even use real colors, that crew. They're so stressed out, they can't even use the real colors about it, right? And these are all, to me, symptoms of a greater pathology around race, right? And the pathology of race is our denial about it, right? And so I understand that these are the kinds of symptoms of folks that are experiencing cognitive dissonance. I used to wonder about this, you know, and my daughter who's working on her PhD right now, she calls what we experience, and some of you are familiar with, there's a wonderful film that Shakti Butler just finished, Cracking the Codes. And my daughter calls this experience we have, because you see, with most white people, it's unconscious. It's a lack of awareness or consciousness of the behavior. I think it was Stevie Wonder that said, you know, ain't it funny how you feel shows on your face? And what ends up happening is we experience what my daughter calls a subtle contempt. A subtle contempt. And the white person doesn't know that their body language has changed, don't know that they flushed red, don't know that their conversation changed when they saw you. They don't know it happened, you see, because of what I'm going to share with you today. Because we've all been socialized in this big tank of pathology. And we reflect it every day. And you cannot fix what you don't understand. Post-traumatic slave syndrome not only affected African people, it is where the focus of my study is, it affected everyone. And I would, you know, really encourage you to search out and begin to look at the impact it has had on you and your community by virtue of vicarious racism. Vicarious racism, that you experience the racism of others. For example, if I were to ask you, and this is one of my weeding out the class questions, if I were to ask you, people in the audience, first of all, show of hands, how many of you think, don't be afraid, you have a grasp of what racism means? Show of hands. How many people think you know what racism is? Okay. How many of you in the audience believe, experience, know, or have some awareness of something called white racism? In other words, white people that have been racist. Show of hands. Okay, how many people, again, you're talking here about America, have an understanding, experience, or awareness of black racism? Show of hands. Okay, so now we're going to do basically work that through to kind of look at Joy's definition. So we're going to start with white racism. And I need for you to tell me the ways in which white racism has adversely impacted the lives of black people as an entire group of people here in this country. In what ways? Name them. Financially. So, jobs, education, okay. Health care, incarceration, criminal justice, housing. Okay, you following me? We got it. And I usually write this on a board so nobody can get confused. So it's real clear. Now I need you to tell me how black racism adversely impacts the lives of white people as an entire group of people in this country. Now this is when the folks go, she's calling me a racist. Let me get my book. I'm out. They get mad, right? So it does not suggest that there aren't black people that are prejudiced, that in fact hate white people. Hate white people so much that they invite people over, put big pictures of white people on the wall and throw darts and drink beer. No doubt. They jump up and down and go, I hate you white people. They call out names, but you still get the loan. Are you following me? So it doesn't suggest that people don't like people, but not only do you not like me, but you have the power to impact an entire group of people with that dislike. That's the difference. So when we begin to have a conversation about this, do you see? And why it is that people get all twisted around it as though someone's trying to assault them. This was set up long before any of us showed up in this room. This was set up a long time ago. But we need to get clear about it so we don't get caught up in the game. And we get caught up in the game because, again, I love Peggy McIntosh, a really good friend, and who truly is an advocate, fierce warrior woman out there. But Peggy will say, but we're nice. Right? And you see, again, those are the things that produce dissonance. So cognitive dissonance is when a person is faced with contradictory information internally, simultaneously holding contradictory ideas and beliefs, and trying to ferret through them, because we don't deal well with holding on to contradictory beliefs, thoughts, actions, or ideologies. We've got to somehow balance that out. So my first question was, how was it that Europeans were able to oppress and subjugate an entire group of people, and using the figures from our text, incorrect though they be, from 1619 to the ratification of the 13th Amendment, which would make that 246 years. How did white people who deemed themselves superior, intelligent, civilized, noble, and moral engage in behaviors for 246 years that are the antithesis of that? How did they reconcile the dissonance? Because it clearly had to produce dissonance, right? So that was my fundamental question. How did you do that? So one of the things that we have to understand that jumps out is the first fundamental contradiction of this country was the notion of freedom and democracy. That's called call and response. Don't nobody get upset. Don't, you know. I just want y'all to know that's what happens. It's what we do, you know. I don't want anybody in the audience that's not familiar with that behavior. Okay, so you have this idea of freedom and democracy, a constitution and basically a moral construct that says, send us your poor, your tired, your huddled masses yearning to breathe free. One nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. How does one breathe those statements and at the exact same time be committing genocide against native people, the rightful people of this country, and then imprisoning, enslaving, beating, selling, maiming African people for 246 years? How does one reconcile it with those beliefs? Because you see, that produces cognitive dissonance. So the way you can resolve cognitive dissonance as it relates to oppressing or subjugating entire groups of people, and you'll see this throughout this presentation, and when you leave here, you'll see it in the media, you'll see it demonstrated everywhere you need to make people feel okay about crazy stuff. What you have to first do is justify the behavior. Because you see, when you can justify the behavior, you can calm the conscience. Well, I'm justified in this. Well, then you have to justify this by somehow proving that what you're doing is correct and right. And you do that by relabeling the people you are oppressing or subjugating to fit your behavior towards them. And this is how you relieve any guilt or any, you know, any kind of animosity, fear, anxiety, dissonance. So what I'm going to do is talk about how these major institutions... up to an hour, because you're not going to get all of those. I just want you to know. These are the ones I looked at. Just read the book. They're in the book. Science, politics, religion, education, medicine, media, and law. Those are the ones I looked at. I'm not suggesting this list is exhaustive. It's just the only time, that's all the time I had, was to look at that much. And also try to write a book that people could wrap their head around, that the average person could wrap their head around, and the scholar would be stimulated by. That's why it took so long to write. So we begin here, and I am eventually going to get a better picture of this, but I haven't been back because it tends to make me mad to go to the Statue of Liberty. So I went to the Statue of Liberty. How many of you have been? Okay, when I went to the Statue of Liberty, I had already been to France, and when I was in France, I had actually seen this rendering. This is one of the earlier renderings of the Statue of Liberty. She is holding in her left hand broken chains. And this was commissioned, again, Bartholdi, who is the sculptor, the artist, in 1865. And the statue was to, one, commemorate the end of the Civil War, hence the end of slavery and the breaking of the chains, and to forge a relationship with France and the United States. So this early rendering was what was presented to the United States originally. And the United States, upon receiving it, said they didn't want it. And they said, we don't want this. And of course, Bartholdi insisted that the chains be present because the chains represent, because you know she's now holding, do you all know what she's holding now? No, you don't. Nobody knows what she's holding. Matter of fact, I went twice because I knew the first time I was going to be too mad to be objective. So I went twice. So the second time I knew I could be open and listen to the people. Nobody knows what she's holding. They think she might be holding some books. She might be holding some scrolls, some tablets. Nobody's for sure, but she sure ain't holding no chains. Right? That they were clear about because they didn't want the chains. Well, this particular photo is inside the Statue of Liberty. Now, I knew it had to be there. I knew it had to be there. So when I went to the Statue of Liberty, a friend of mine who works for the Department of the Interior, he got me tickets to go up in her eye all over the place. And so I went, I could go everywhere in the thing. So I got the little ticket, but I wasn't really looking and caring. I wanted to find this. And let me tell you where it is, because you didn't see it. I know you didn't see it. By now, I've been back, so they might, because we had news at 11 when I was there, I'm telling you. So what happened was, this was placed in the basement of the Statue of Liberty behind a case of figurines encased in glass facing a wall in a hallway. That's why you didn't see it. They kind of had to have it there for historical reasons, but they didn't really want to have it out anywhere because then you have to explain it. So when I went on the tour, you know, and if you've ever been on the tour, thousands of people every 20 minutes get off a great big ferry. And you got the school children with the little rope all walking together. You got the, you know, the colleges and universities, high schools. You got the people with all the cameras from other countries pouring in and out. And so they push you into a little crowd and they give you a ranger who's going to then walk you through. So our ranger said, yes, I'm going to be touring you today. And if there's anyone that has a question, I'm waving my hand before we get started. And he goes, yes, you have a question already? I said, yes. I wondered if you could talk to us about the chains. And everyone in the crowd goes, chains? What's she talking about? I said, chains, you know? And then people start translating, chains, right? So he goes, thank you so much. I'll talk to you about that later. So we get to a point where we get to these figurines. They're bronze statues of Bartholdi and the Eiffel Man and the philanthropists, all the people that were involved with getting this statue to the United States. And he goes, now I will answer your question about the chains. He says a huge argument ensued between Bartholdi and the United States. And the United States were insistent that he not have the chains. And of course, Bartholdi was insistent that they do have the chains. He says, I'm not doing it if you don't do the chains. And the United States said, no, absolutely not. And that's why you don't see the chains. However, Bartholdi won the argument because the chains are actually there where it is impossible for you to see them. The chains remain at the Statue of Liberty's feet. And no matter where you go, at least in the two times that I went, there was not a single picture. Now, you got to know when you go on the tour, they show you way more than you want to know about the Statue of Liberty. They tell you how thick it is. They show you the width. They tell you it's made of copper. That's why it's green. They got her head over here. They have the torch over there. They have the whole thing cut up in all kind of parts, but not her feet. Because you see, the moment you show those chains, you then have to explain them. And we can't do that to Cindy and Timmy. Because that would produce cognitive. So they simply don't show them. And so, you know, I was a little upset about that because, you know, I'm going, this is not okay. So I go to the ranger station. You know, I'm in the ranger station now. And I'm talking to two senior rangers about this. Both of them black, one man been there 25 years. And I said to him, I said, you realize I'm an educator, right? And I have concerns that this part of the history is not being, not only not spoken of, not displayed. So here's what happens. Little white children walk through, and white people, and aunts, uncles, old people, young people, and they say things like, well, you know, my great-great. Well, you know, my family came through Ellis Island. You know, and my great-grandmother, and my... And you see black people walk through curiously. Black children look on curiously because they see no connection to Lady Liberty. But how much taller would they stand if they knew that Lady Liberty was standing on the chains that their ancestors came in the belly of ships on? How much more proud would they be if they knew that this country acknowledged the shoulders upon which they stood? Maybe those sagging pants would come up. Maybe they would get a better sense of who they were and their intrinsic nobility and dignity. Maybe they would if they knew who paid for them. So it's not about Joy saying, ooh, look, it's about my children understanding who paid for them to be here. And that was my concern. Now, spoke with the Department of, you know, a lot of folks got involved in this. I ended up training all of the Rangers, by the way, because it turned out... It turned out that that particular ranger had done his homework, but the other rangers didn't know the chains were even there. So I did a training, and it was promised that they were going to clear this little problem up. I haven't been back because I don't want news at 11 again. But if anybody goes back, it'll let me know. But again, it was a hidden in plain sight. So When we look through, we also know throughout our history that we had a trail of tears, something we should never forget, the suffering of Native people, forced relocation. These numbers are not correct. There are actually more people died than the 4,000 identified here. We also know that there were some who attempted, although weak and pathetically, to offer reparations, $250 million in funds to redress the problem. Because of some of the policies that were enacted against Native people and their children. And, of course, Native people laughed out loud, at which they should, because you cannot redress the injury to that culture. And I'm going to go back to a slide I want you to see. I skipped it earlier. This is a slide. James Gilligan, who's a psychiatrist, wrote a book called Violence. And in this book, he turns into an activist about halfway through the book, because he's clinical for the most part in the first part of the book, talking about, you know, why people are violent and this sort of thing. But then he eventually says that the real cause is the destruction of culture. And he's talking principally about black and brown men. He talked about a system that systematically destroys the culture and thus the person, robbing them of their whole selves, and that it is the destruction of the culture that is tantamount to the destruction of the self. So when we look at these atrocities, we look at the Trail of Tears, we are reminded again of the horrific nature of assaulting a person's character. Well, this is another photo I took when I was in Ghana. And this is the door of no return at Elmina Slave Castle. And we also had a trail of sorrow that you never read about, nor did you hear about. Because you see, we didn't all live on the coast. We were marched to the coast. And sometimes we were marched as far as the interiors of Africa to that coast. And millions died en route. But you never heard about them, did you? And part of what I did was, you know, in an effort to try to get a sense of myself, my family, we did the little swab. And so, which I believe, by the way, the United States should give that freely to every person of African descent. I shouldn't have had to pay for that because I was robbed of that, you see. And so we did the swab and indeed found out that my family was from the west coast of Africa, and we're doing further tests so I can maybe even stand in the spot that my people came from. But what's interesting is what happened when they sent me back my little information, which was way more information than I understood. Because I went through gene base, and you know, these are genetic folks that are sending you all haplogroups and charts. And so when I got my information, I wanted to be able to articulate it intelligently. So I called them, and they're really good about that. They'll talk to you however many times you call. They'll pull up your information. And so I called, and the gentleman that answered the phone was Chinese. Now, I didn't know that at first, but he was talking to me, and I said, I need for you to explain what I'm looking at here. He says, okay. He says, so what are you looking at? I said, I'm looking at this big map. He says, okay, I have it up. I said, you see on the map the big giant kind of arrow? He goes, yeah. I said, now, are my people from where the arrow is starting, or are my people from where the arrow is pointing? And he said, sweetheart, we are all from where that arrow starts. He says, I am Chinese, and trust me, Chinese people are even now trying to find out if they came from somewhere else because they don't want to be from the same place anybody else has been from. He said, Chinese people are trying to find their own genetic markers anywhere else in the world because they don't want to be with anybody. He says, but trust me, based on mitochondrial DNA, this is where we all started, regardless of where we eventually migrated to. So now that I'm speaking to all you Africans, when I started to look at the experience of my ancestors, and again, I don't say that in any way other than the absolute truth. I know for a fact they were my ancestors. Cape Coast Slave Castle, I understand that recently some folks have gone and they tried to clean it up. They might have heard about my presentation. Anyway, when you first go into this particular dungeon, this castle, you see two dungeons, male, female. And we had the bounty of having a scholar be a part of our journey. And so the scholar was explaining to us that they would often rape the women and the girls within 50 feet of the men, immediately, right in front of their fathers, their sons, their brothers, their husbands, right in front of them, for two reasons: to remind them that this man cannot help you, that this man has been totally emasculated, and that if you do not do what we want you to do, we will destroy you.
Dr. Joy DeGruy, Post-Traumatic Slave Syndrome, America's Legacy of Enduring Injury and Healing, by Joy DeGruy, with a foreword by Randall Robinson, if you want to get the book for a contribution of $100. If you want to get the DVD, Post-Traumatic Slave Syndrome, Let the Healing Begin, pledge $120. The book and DVD together are yours for $200. If you call 212-209-2950, that's 212-209-2950, or if you want to get this speech that you just heard, part of a 10-speech pack on two CDs that includes the neuropsychologist Mario Martinez and Angela Davis and Eduardo Galeano and Eve Ensler and Gabor Mate and Noam Chomsky and Gar Alperovitz and Dave Zirin and others, that two CD 10-speech pack is yours for $120 or $10 a month if you call 212-209-2950. From the beginning of American chattel slavery in 1619 until the ratification of the 13th Amendment in 1865, Africans were hunted like animals, captured, sold, tortured, raped. They experienced the worst kind of physical, emotional, psychological, and spiritual abuse. Given such history, Dr. Joy DeGruy asks, isn't it likely many slaves were severely traumatized? Furthermore, did the trauma and the effects of such horrific abuse end with the abolition of slavery? We urge you to call right now. The book is yours for $100. The DVD is yours for $120. Put them together for $200. The number to call is 212-209-2950. That's 212-209-2950. Give us a call. Let us know you are in the house. We ask you, please, to make the call. Emancipation was followed by 100 more years of institutionalized subjugation through the enactment of black codes and Jim Crow laws, peonage, convict leasing, domestic terrorism, and lynching. Today, the violations continue, and when combined with the crimes of the past, writes Joy DeGruy, result in yet unmeasured injury. She says, what do repeated traumas visited upon generation after generation of a people produce? What are the impacts of the ordeals associated with chattel slavery and with the institutions that followed on African Americans today? Post-traumatic slave syndrome, America's legacy of enduring injury and healing, answers these questions and more. Dr. DeGruy encourages African Americans to view their attitudes, assumptions, behaviors through the lens of history and so gain a greater understanding of the impact centuries of slavery and oppression has had on African Americans. We urge you to go to the phone right now and let us know that you are there. The book is yours for $100. The DVD for $120. Put them together for $200. We urge you to make the call that makes the difference. That number again is 212-209-2950. 212-209-2950. Your call makes it possible for WBAI to happen. If you live in New Jersey, in Passaic or Whippany, if you live in Jersey City or in New Brunswick, we ask you to go to the phone right now. If you live in Montclair or Upper Montclair, we cannot do this work without you. That number, again, is 212-209-2950. Get the book and DVD for $200, or the DVD alone for $120 or $10 a month, or the book alone for $100. We'll send it right out to you, Dr. Joy DeGruy. The DVD, Post-Traumatic Slave Syndrome, Let the Healing Begin. We ask you to call in right now. We ask you to stand up for independent media. Your call makes the difference. You make it possible. If you live in Harlem or you live in Hempstead, if you live in Amityville, Freeport, or Massapequa, or Massapequa Park, or Babylon, if you live in Little Neck or Great Neck or Roslyn Heights, go to your phone. Fill the phone lines. Queens Village, we need you. If you live in Hell's Kitchen or Chelsea or Clinton or the West Village or the Far West Village, or you live in the Lower East Side, Alphabet City, or you live in Williamsburg or in Prospect Heights, perhaps you live in Park Slope, we ask you to go to the phone. Fort Greene, we need your support. Bed-Stuy, are you listening? 212-209-2950. For the book and the DVD, they're yours for a contribution of $200. 212-209-2950. 212-209-2950. Make that call that makes it possible for WBAI to continue. If you want to come to the set of Democracy Now! In New York City and watch the broadcast, we're in the Chelsea neighborhood of Manhattan. You'd have had an amazing time today. You bring a special guest, maybe your partner or a daughter, a son, a friend you want to meet up with. You come to the set, you watch the broadcast, and then I personally host you for dinner, and we break bread together. We toast WBAI. I get to hear your stories. We become old friends fast. If you've done well and want to do good, what a wonderful way to do it. You're keeping WBAI alive. It's called Dinner and a Show. The dinner is dinner. The show is Democracy Now! Live in the morning, 8 Eastern Standard Time, and you sit on the set, and we ply you with tea and coffee, muffins and bagels. We urge you to call 212-209-2950. 212-209-2950. Your call makes it possible for WBAI to continue. If you want to do dinner and a show, you don't have to know when you can make this reservation. Just make the reservation now. Then my colleague Brenda gives you a call in a few days. She says, hey, when do you want to come to the set of Democracy Now! When do you want to have dinner? Next week, next month, next season? And you'll work it out with her. You might say, I have no idea. I'll email you when I'm ready. And that's fine, too. But what counts is your call right now. We are counting on you to make the call. 212-209-2950. 212-209-2950. Whether you want to make a reservation for dinner and a show, or you simply want to pledge $25 to become a member of WBAI, call in now. If you want to get Joy DeGruy's DVD, Post-Traumatic Slave Syndrome, pledge $120. And that DVD will be sent right out to you. Or you can do it $10 a month or $120 altogether. The book, by the same title, Post-Traumatic Slave Syndrome, America's Legacy of Enduring Injury and Healing, is yours for a contribution of $100, both together for $200. We urge you to call. Let us know you're in the house, that you're standing up for independent media. We cannot do this work without you, only with you. Hey, Samuel, thank you for so much for calling in from the People's Republic of Brooklyn, that is P. Rob. Thank you for making that contribution. We urge you to call in right now. Calvin called from the Bronx. Esther also called in from the Bronx. You're getting the book. We urge you to join Esther and Calvin and Samuel. Keep those phone calls coming in, folks. 212-209-2950. 212-209-2950. Please call in. Please let us know you're in the house. Please let us know you're standing up for independent media. We cannot do this without you, only with you. Please call in. 212-209-2950. 212-209-2950. Give us a call. Let us know you're there. Let us know you're standing up for independent media. Randall Robinson writes in the beginning of Post-Traumatic Slave Syndrome, African Americans are being urged not only by the traditional bastions of American power, but by many successful blacks as well to forget slavery, to forget Jim Crow, to forget about all that Africa was prior to the advent of transatlantic slavery. In this far-sighted and thoughtful book, Joy DeGruy adds her voice to those who are telling black Americans to pay no attention to such disastrous advice. Inasmuch as African Americans are the only Americans whose forebears were dragooned to America against their will and enslaved in America for nearly three centuries, a curiosity about our past, questions about our ancestors known and unknown, and a need to know about Africa before we were torn from its breast is not only normal, but indeed is a sign of a healthy intellect, psyche, and soul. We travel many roads with Dr. DeGruy in this book, one of the most moving of which takes us to Ndebele in South Africa in 1994, where we meet Ndebele children. During this visit, we gain important insights into the impact of American slavery on our culture and our soul. The contrasts in the demeanor, attitudes, personalities of Ndebele children reared in traditional African societies, grounded in African traditions and mores, shaped by their own culture on the one hand, and the children of Onverwacht, a community of blacks first enslaved then discarded by white South Africans, is instructive. Here, we're helped to better understand the long formative influence of American slavery upon the socio-psychological dilemmas of America's today, of America today, more than 100 years after slavery's official abolishment. We urge you to call in right now. Christopher in Queens Village called in. You pledged $120. You'll be getting the 10-speech, 2-CD pack. You'll be getting not only Dr. Joy DeGruy, but Mario Martinez, who we played yesterday, Angela Davis and Eduardo Galeano, and Jeremy Scahill and Eve Ensler, and Gabor and Noam Chomsky, and Gar Alpervitz, and Dave Zirin. You'll get all that for that $120 contribution, Christopher. Thanks so much for calling in. Keep these phone calls coming in, folks. It really matters that you call. Randall Robinson writes in the foreword to Dr. Joy DeGruy's Post-Traumatic Slave Syndrome. Keep the phone calls coming in, folks. 212-209-2950. 212-209-2950. American slavery was the economic cornerstone in which American wealth and power were built. Wealth and power which last to this day, as do the psychosocial consequences of American slavery, both for the descendants of the enslaved as well as the descendants of the enslavers. Dr. DeGruy helps us to understand the multifaceted impact of slavery on black life, how we relate to the world as well as how we relate to each other. Most importantly, in this work by Joy DeGruy, she urges us to know and embrace our past in all its fullness, for therein lies our only hope for a healthy, self-affirming present and future. We urge you to call 212-209-2950, 212-209-2950. Make the call that makes WBAI happen. We urge you to be there. We ask you to stand up for independent media. Your call makes it possible for WBAI. 212-209-2950, 212-209-2950. If you live in Bayshore or Babylon or Brightwaters or Islip, East Islip, Central Islip, or West Islip, if you live in Port Jeff or Setauket or Stony Brook or Stony Point, or you live in Port Washington, or you live in Hollis, Queens, or you live in Laurelton or Jackson Heights or Jamaica or Flushing, or over there in Long Beach or the Rockaways, we ask you to go to the phone and let us know that you're in the house. 212-209-2950. Maybe you live on the Upper West Side and you'd like to get post-traumatic slave syndrome into a library or a community center, or in Harlem or in Hell's Kitchen. We urge you to call in right now. The book is yours for $100, the DVD for $120. Put them together for $200. 212-209-2950. That's 212-209-2950. If you live in Connecticut and you're listening to WBAI, because there's a transmitter, the WBAI transmitter atop the Empire State Building. And in order to keep it there, we have to pay rent of $50,000 a month. That's how much we have to raise, folks. More than that, that's just the rent on the transmitter. We urge you to call. That number again is 212-209-2950, 212-209-2950. Please call in.
please fill the phone lines. Let us know you're there. If you live in Morristown or Parsippany or Basking Ridge or Short Hills or Newark or Elizabeth or New Brunswick or Perth Amboy, or you live in Bellmead or you live in Long Valley or Mount Olive Township or Yonkers or White Plains or Mount Vernon or Huntington Station or Smithtown or Coram, call in, fill the phone lines. Let us know you're standing up for independent media. And if you want to come to the set of Democracy Now! And watch the broadcast, I would love to host you here. We'll tour you through the greenest internet TV radio studio in the country. Maybe you have a birthday to celebrate or an anniversary, a holiday, a graduation. We urge you to call 212-209-2950, 212-209-2950. Please call in. If you live in the Oranges, in West Orange, give us a call. Let us know you're in the house. Speaking of colors, if you live in Blue Point out on Long Island or Green Point in Brooklyn or Red Hawk in Brooklyn, we're asking you to go to the phone. Brownsville, give us a call. Let us know you're in the house. Let us know you're standing up for independent media. Your call makes the difference. We cannot do this without you. If you live in Hempstead or Freeport or Hicksville or, Huntington Station or Fort Salonga or Brentwood or Coram or Islip or maybe down there in Riverhead and Sagaponack and Sag Harbor or in Mattituck or in Southampton or Westhampton or have ever visited those places or over in Montauk or driving along Montauk Highway, give us a call. Let us know you're standing up for independent media. 212-209-2950. Post-traumatic slave syndrome. We're only offering this today. It's by Dr. Joy DeGruy. The book is yours for a $100 contribution. The DVD of the speech, Post-Traumatic Slave Syndrome, Let the Healing Begin. That DVD is yours for $120. We didn't even play it for you today. The book and DVD together are yours for $200. 212-209-2950. 212-209-2950. If you want to get the 10 speech 2-CD set, that includes the speech you heard today, Dr. Joy DeGruy, Mario Martinez, a speech we were playing yesterday, Angela Davis and Eduardo Galeano and Eve Ensler and Gabor Mate and Noam Chomsky and Gar Alperovitz and Dave Zirin. Those 10 speeches are yours for a contribution of $120 on 2 CDs. If you call 212-209-2950, please call in. That is what counts. We could really use someone calling in and making a reservation for dinner and a show. I'm going to be having dinner and a show with a mother and her daughter who are coming in next week and a couple who is coming in from California. Maybe you're listening right here in New York. You don't even have to make that extended, no expenses paid trip. So please call and support your station. That $2,000 contribution you make to keep WBAI alive goes directly to WBAI. I host you for dinner. We host you on the set of Democracy Now! You get to see how the show broadcasts in over 1,200 stations, and it's a great honor to be able to do this. We urge you to call 212-209-2950, 212-209-2950. Please make the call that makes it possible for WBAI to continue. I definitely can't do this without you folks. We need each and every one of you calling in. Please phone in. Please let us know you're there. Please let us know you're standing up for independent media. Your call makes it possible for WBAI to continue. If you live along the Connecticut River or the Hudson or the East River or the Great South Bay or the Long Island Sound or the Atlantic Ocean, give us a call. Flood WBAI with support. We need your help today. If you live in Westchester, if you live in White Plains, if you live in Mount Vernon, if you live in Yonkers, if you live in Palisades in New Jersey, if you live in Fort Lee, we're asking you to go to the phone. Hoboken, we need your support. 212-209-2950. Fill these phone lines. That is what counts right now. $100 for Joy DeGruy's book. Hey, thank you very much to the person who just called in from Flushing. And thank you to Lee who called in from Flushing. An anonymous contributor just got the DVD for $120. Thank you so much for these pledges. They really matter to us. Keep these phone calls coming in. Your call makes it possible for WBAI to continue. Dr. Joy DeGruy, taking on centuries, tracing the emergence of Africans from slavery, followed by a virtual re-enslavement through peonage, black codes, convict lease, and Jim Crow, to contemporary problems, including overrepresentation of African Americans in prisons, violence, and self-destructive behaviors visible today. Gail just called in from Teaneck. She's getting a copy of the DVD. That pledge for a contribution of $120. Thanks so much, Gail, for that pledge. Keep the phone calls coming in, folks. 212-209-2950. 212-209-2950. Folks, we're $2,000. Let's see if we can match that $2,000 with someone pledging for dinner and a show. Maybe you want to think ahead to a graduation or a holiday gift, a birthday gift, an anniversary gift. You want to take someone with you here to Democracy Now! In the Chelsea neighborhood of Manhattan, and you watch the broadcast. We treat you royally. You see how we broadcast on QDTV every night at 6:30 and 1 on Channel 75, Time Warner, Channel 30 on Verizon Fios, how we broadcast every morning live at 8, in addition to on BAI, if you live in Manhattan, on Channel 34, Time Warner, Manhattan Neighborhood Network, and repeated at 7 in the evening on Manhattan Neighborhood Network. We urge you to call 212-209-2950. 212-209-2950. Nice Bilson is getting the $200 pack. Thank you so much for that pledge. Calling in from Springfield and getting the book and the DVD. Keep these phone calls coming in, folks. We cannot do this without you. Only together, only with you. Your call makes the difference. You make it possible for WBAI to happen. Keep these phone calls coming in. 212-209-2950. 212-209-2950. Keep those phone calls coming in. Antoinette called in from Brooklyn and pledged $100 in the name of Democracy Now! Thank you so much, Antoinette. It means so much to us that you called. 212-209-2950. Keep the phone calls coming in. If you live in Patterson or Clifton and haven't called yet, please make your pledge. Please let us know you're standing up for independent media. Please call in. Please let us know that Democracy Now! Matters to you. If you live in Hackensack, or you live in White Plains, or you live in Valhalla, or Pleasantville, or Chappaqua, or Ossining, please make your call. Joe just called in from Jamaica. Thank you for calling in from the most diverse borough in the world. Thank you for that pledge. Can we hear from someone in Jamaica Estates? Maybe you live in New City, or perhaps you live in Mount Kisco, or Bedford Hills, or Katona, or Thornwood, or Ormonk. Give us a call. Fill the phone lines. We just got another anonymous contributor from Manhattan getting a copy of Joy DeGruy's Post-Traumatic Slave Syndrome, Let the Healing Begin, the DVD, yours for a contribution of $120 or $10 a month. If you want to get the book and DVD, that's yours for $200, folks. We're going to move in on $3,000 with your support. We urge you to keep these phone calls coming in. Keep the phone calls letting us know that you support WBAI. Hey, Morris, thanks for joining us from Brooklyn and pledging in the name of Democracy Now! You don't have to pledge for even a gift. You could just pledge $50 or $25. Say you're doing it for Democracy Now! Don't worry, WBAI gets that support, gets that money. You can just do it in our name. Hey, Yorktown Heights, are you listening? Give us a call from Yorktown Heights. Give us a call and let us know you're standing up for independent media. Again, if you live in Harlem, East or West, the Upper East Side or the Upper West Side, the Lower East Side, if you live in Alphabet City or you live along Battery Park, we're asking you to go to the phone and make the call that makes it possible for WBAI to continue. If you live in the Bronx, in Riverside, we ask you to call either in Riverdale, New Jersey, or in Riverdale, New York. Give us a call and let us know that you are there, and we'll send you Joy DeGruy's DVD for $120, the book for $100, put them together for $200, make your call, or the 10 speeches on two CDs that includes Joy DeGruy, but also Mario Martinez, the biocognitive neuropsychologist, Angela Davis, Eduardo Galeano, Ivan Sergaber, Mate Noam Chomsky, Gar Alperitz, Dave Zirin. Tomorrow, Angela Davis will be our guest on Democracy Now! If you appreciated hearing Eddie Conway, could you believe almost 44 years in prison? If you appreciate Democracy Now!, we ask you to go to the phone and pledge what you can to ensure that WBAI continues. 212-209-2950. We have 15 seconds, folks. Please give a call. If you want to make a reservation for dinner and a show, come to the set of Democracy Now! And watch the broadcast, you and your special guest. I'd love to host you for dinner. We'll kick back, break bread together, toast WBAI. That's a $2,000 contribution, and you get to watch the show live. Or pledge $200 and get Joy DeGruy's Post-Traumatic Slave Syndrome, book and DVD $200, DVD $120, book $100. Please make your call. 212-209-2950. I'm Amy Goodman.
Thanks for joining us. Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the War and Peace Report, and we're asking you to go to the phone to become a member of WBAI. We need your support. We ask you to be there. We definitely cannot do this without you. The number to call is 516-620-3602. That's 516.
Well, that's not the phone number. It's 212-209-2950. And I am just seeing here, according to a spreadsheet that is up, unbeknownst to me, that I begin my program now. I thought I'd begin at 1:30, but no, it's now. So I'll tell you what we're going to do. I'm going to chat with you and at you about the importance of what Christine Blasdale and Amy Goodman were talking about in supporting Democracy Now! And supporting WBAI, more to the point. And, I've known this for like 2 minutes, and I think I just done something that I didn't want to do, which is, there's the program. I think I closed the program that was entreating you all to pledge, and we wouldn't want that. Also, if Lister isn't coming in at 3 a.m., we're going to need that. My name is Jim Freund. This is not Earthwatch. Hopefully, Earthwatch is going to be with us next week with Robert Knight. Been hearing from him through email, so I'm trusting that's good. But you know what? The technological issues are going on here that I want to take a look at. And therefore, I'm going to play a bit of music. See if I can't get that to come up as it should. Don't even have all of my songs with me. I usually rely on a lovely internet service that I shan't name to get songs that I subscribe to. And I don't want to play my theme. I'll play that at 1:30, when I start the show proper. In the meantime, while I am doing all this, I do entreat you to continue with what these good folk were saying and make a phone call, make a pledge right now, 212-209-2950. But they were asking you for $25 and $120 and things like that. I'm not going to ask for that. I'm going to ask you for $10. $10. That's it. $10. That will now... Oh, yeah, they were asking for right now for a year. The deal I'm asking for is the BAI Buddy, which is $10 per month. That makes you a sustaining member so that WBAI may perhaps sustain itself. And for that $10, you will get that same 8-gig thumb drive that they were talking about with the 100 speaker collection plus the best of WBAI thumb drive. So this would be $180 value. Yours available for $10 a month. 212-209-2950. Let's see, can I, every time I come in, they change what things happen on this computer to default to different places. And I'm trying to get to the one that I use so often. Here I go. It's closer to it. Fine. Now all I have to do is theoretically log in. No, it's giving me an ad to join, but I'm already a member. Are you already a member of WBAI? Well, surely you can give a gift to somebody who... hold on. Who is not yet a full member and you would like to turn them on to WBAI in order to help assure our survival. Right now, there is so much going on that is dire. I have little doubt that many of you are probably reading about this in the newspapers. New York Times has certainly been doing no small amount of coverage. Aha, finally, now it's asking me to log in. And one of the interesting things is in all the various fund drives that have been going on, ours has been atypically successful. We have made our goals last time out. We did not the first 2 weeks, and somebody who was in charge of it was let go. Why are you doing this to me? Can I finally get access to my songs? And after that, the drive was sadly extended right through this week. And, well, it's been going well. What I'm very pleased to tell you about, among other things, is that we managed to pay off the back debt that we had in terms of paying our own staff that we let go. We let the entire new staff go, a number of ops people, and they were owed severance pay. That was not covered. As a result of the money that we have raised so far this month, I should say this month and last month, we are now able to actually have paid off that severance. And now it's back to supporting ourselves. There's this little thing called the monthly transmitter bill. And that runs well over $50,000 a month. And that is what this phase of our drive entails. So I beg you, please, 212-209-2950. You can make any pledge, any amount, at that phone number, but I ask you to become a WBAI buddy, because that means not only 10 bucks today in our coffers, but an assurance of future money coming in. 212-209-2950. Please make that call now. And finally, I've gotten some music up, so let's have a little Bix.
People thought, and again, sometimes people go, well, it's never a black woman teaching. It doesn't matter, because if anybody black teaching.
Okay, apparently I was too successful in getting that other program up and running. So, you know, I can't even see how to access it. But if all I do is bring up the computer, that is playing from some source that the computer is not acknowledging, not even in the task manager. Is it showing it to me? No, that's not working. There's the name of it under processes. But if I bring up the audio.
So filled today. Because we're a hot mess in this country around.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. You know it. You know it. Okay, I am going to try to get around this. You see, this is what happens. Up here at CCNY, we have no turntables. We have a couple of CD players, but Lister comes in laden with CDs, and it's nigh impossible, and I don't like the way one does segues with that. So I depend on good old computerization, and it's getting well beyond me. Ooh, listen to all that sound in the background. Okay, not really sure what to do here. Wait a minute. No, that's running. I can stop it. Okay. Did that do it? Yes, that did it. Well, at least now I can go to music. And we may hear a little for a while. So, as I was saying earlier, here's some Vic Spiderbeck. And of course, it's mislabeled, because I know what that song is, and that is a thoroughly offensive song. If you're not familiar with the tune Mississippi Mud, believe me, you'll be grateful that I changed that. Well, apparently that other thing did not yet stop. You know what? We're going to listen to both at the same time till we get this worked out.
Money for the importance of this radio station and this network. Sometimes we forget in the hectic day-to-day business that we do here. But this is the one place on your dial that you can tune to hear alternative thoughts on a whole range of things, everything from public affairs and
thank you. a bubble of trouble and care. Very fond of petting, but I'm getting nowhere. Reaching for someone, not finding anyone there. Oh, 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 no sweet romancer to answer my prayer. Always building castles that nobody will share. Reaching for someone, not finding anyone there. Is there a June honeymoon? Is there a tune lovers croon? Is there a day coming soon when I'll find someone somewhere? Oh, no, wouldn't worry, who wouldn't swear? Heaven is a Hades when you're up in the air, reaching for someone, not finding anyone there.
Thank you. she ever roam? My mama may like just a song.
When you were a kid, where did you want to be? Don't answer, I'll tell you, on your mother's knee.
Your mother and my mother too were angels whose hearts were assured.
And the one up above sent his message of love
to your mother and mine.
Night is dark, but I don't mind, 'cause a happy lark will be singing at the end of the road. I can't go wrong, I must go right, I'll find my way, 'cause a guiding light will be shining at the end of the road. There may be thorns in my path, oh, but I'll wear a smile, 'cause in a little while my path will be roses. Rain may fall from up above, but I won't stop, 'cause the ones I love will be waiting at the end of the road.
changed into wheat as easy as the weatherman. Now it's getting kind of cold, getting kind of hot. Listen, I forgot, since he was a tot, he's been the talk of Dixieland. In my ear, as I keep on asking, hey, what's the big idea? Think of a moon above, doesn't it speak of love, Mary? Why do you lead me on? Why do you be so contrary? You wouldn't let my castles come tumbling down. Think of the things in store, what are you waiting for, Mary? Thank you.
shaking like a leaf on a tree that's coming loose from the stem. Shaking like a leaf on a tree, because I'm coming loose, my man. I'm like a weeping willow, weeping on my pillow. For years and years there ain't no sweet man that's worth the soul of my ba da da ba ba da ba ba da ba ba da ba da ba da. Down and down he dragged me, like a fiend he nagged me. For years and years there ain't no sweet man that's worth the salt of my ba-da-da-ba-da-da-da. Although I may be blue, still I'm through. I must tell him goodbye, rather than have that man gonna lay me down and just die. So, broken-hearted sisters, aggravated misters, lend me your ears, there ain't no sweet man that's worth the salt of my ba-da-da-ba-da-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da. Cobwebs in your hand, you're getting rusty, so you say. You're feeling battered, and everything looks gray and sad. You're getting worried, yes indeed. I know exactly what you need. A little sunshine will make you feel okay. Now look here, give the blues a change. Find a sunny place. Go and paint your face. Sunshine. Pay your doctor bill. Throw away his pill. You can cure your ill with sunshine.
Why don't you take your teardrops one by one before it gets too late? Hang them up out in the sun and they'll evaporate.
When the trouble starts pounding at your heart, rub the injured part with sunshine.
Thank you.
Lordy, how they play it. Boy, they really sway it.